Rapid Conversion's bridge was located halfway up the shaft, toward the prow, as far from the outer hull as possible, a placement that made it invulnerable to all but the most devastating attack. As Dadaab scampered inside, close on Tartarus's heels, he noted the bridge was, while not as roomy as the Jirohane's feasting hall, large enough to accommodate the entire pack. All were present, most hunched over workstations protruding from the bridge's reinforced walls. These were filled with holographic switches that flickered against the Jirohane's blue armor. Like Tartarus, they were girded for a fight. Maccabeus stood before the bridge's central hollow tank, his paws knuckled against its smooth metal railing. The chieftain's armor was colored gold, but made of a much stronger alloy. Varinus and another Jirohane named Lysinus flanked him, and their jutting shoulder plates kept Dadaab from seeing whatever the tank had on display. Dadaab bowed, touching his knuckles to the bridge's grooved metal floor. It vibrated in time with the cruiser's jump drive, idling many bridge lengths to stern. Ever mindful of the Vice Minister of Tranquility's desire for caution, Maccabeus had kept the drive hot in case they needed to beat a hasty retreat from the alien system.
"Come forward, Deacon," Maccabeus said, catching a faint whiff of methane.
Dadaab righted himself and followed Tartarus to the tank.
"Make room," Tartarus growled. "Step aside, Varinus."
Tartarus gave the taller, tan-haired Jirohane a cuff.
"Pardon me," Dadaab gulped. "Excuse me."
His conical tank made sidestepping impractical, and as he pushed past Varinus toward the railing, his tank clanged against the Jirohane's armored thigh. To Dadaab's relief, Varinus was so transfixed he didn't seem to notice.
"Incredible, isn't it?"
Maccabeus said.
"Yes, incredible,"
Dadaab said, peering into the tank below its railing.
"Such enthusiasm, Deacon."
"My apologies, Chieftain. It's just that I've seen it before, aboard the Kigyar ship."
"Ah, of course,"
Maccabeus adopted an ironic tone.
"After all, this is only what?"
He nodded toward the glowing representation of the alien world, its surface covered with insistent reclamation glyphs.
"A few 100,000 luminations."
The truth was Dadaab was still preoccupied with the Horogok's disobedience, and to make matters worse, the bridge was thick with the Jirohane's powerful scents. The excited odors had permeated his mask's membranes, and Dadaab was starting to feel a little sick.
"The numbers are impressive,"
Dadaab choked back a bitter surge.
"Impressive? Unprecedented,"
Maccabeus boomed. Then his voice, a low growl.
"Very well. Tell me what you think of this."
He jabbed a knuckle into a hollow switch embedded in the railing, and the image of the alien planet faded, shrunk to a much smaller size as the holotank's perspective shifted to a wider view of the system. Dadaab saw an iconic image of the cruiser just outside the planet's orbital path, and a safe distance from that, a flashing red triangle indicating a potentially hostile contact.
"It was waiting for us," the chieftain growled, "near the remains of the Kigyar ship."
He pressed another switch, and the holotank zoomed in on the contact, bringing it into focus.
"The design matches the ships the Kigyar raided," Dadaab explained. "A cargo freighter, nothing more."
"Look closer,"
Maccabeus rumbled. Slowly the vessel's representation began to turn. Rapid Conversion sensors had made a detailed scan, and Dadaab could see the freighter's blackened hull had been deeply etched, creating patterns in the bright metal beneath. No, not patterns, he thought. Pictures. Each of the vessel's four lateral sides displayed a different, stylized image of the aliens and the Kigyar. In the first picture, one of each creature aimed weapons at each other. The alien held some sort of rifle, the Kigyar a plasma pistol. In the second, the alien had dropped his rifle and held out a handful of round objects that looked like fruit. In the third image, the Kigyar had cast aside its weapon to accept the alien's offering. And in the fourth, both creatures sat in what appeared to be an orchard. The alien held a basket of fruit, and the Kigyar was calmly making its selection.
"A peace offering,"
Dadaab said excitedly.
They do not wish to fight.
As the hologram of the vessel continued to spin, the deacon pointed a finger at an outline of the alien planet etched into the lower right corner of each side of the hull. Two crossed lines marked a point in the middle of the world's singular landmass, a little below the equator.
And I believe this is where they would like to meet.
Apparently at dawn,
Maccabeus said, increasing the tank's magnification. Now Dadaab could see that the etchings of the planet were shaded with a terminator line, a shadow that marked the world's passage in and out of night. Cutting perpendicularly across the equator, the line moved around the planet with each successive picture until it intersected the suggested meeting point on the side of the freighter that displayed the presentation of the fruit basket. The chieftain refocused the tank on the actual planet.
But there's more.
Now Dadaab noticed new details. There was some sort of structure in high orbit above the world. Two delicate silver arcs tethered to the surface by seven almost invisible golden strands. Around the structure were hundreds of additional red contact symbols. The deacon hoped the alien's message was sincere. If these contacts were warships, rapid conversion was in serious trouble.
Not to worry, deacon,
Maccabeus said, sensing the envoy's concern.
They haven't moved since we arrived, and they look to be the same as the other vessel. Simple cargo tugs with no obvious weapons.
He gestured with a hairy finger.
But look here, where those cables meet the surface.
Dadaab followed the chieftain's finger. There was a mass of reclamation glyphs clustered at the bottom of the cables. But close to these was another set of forerunner symbols, a diamond of bright green glyphs hovering above the site of the alien's suggested rendezvous.